James chapter 1. Now, we're looking at a situation here with James, again, is introducing them a topic. He's jumping right into it. He's talking about something that we all deal with in life, and that is trials and temptations and our need for the Word of God. In chapter 1 here, we begin talking about the first thing is the trials. And we're going to stay up real quick here, is the trials that we're talking about are the things that we live in, the things on the outside. The next thing we're going to address later on in a few weeks will be going down into verse 13. It says, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. So now that's going to become more of an inside temptation or something that's going on the inside. We all find ourselves in situations as we read this verse, chapter 1, verse 2. Let's begin there. He says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. So what we've got happening there is one thing we're familiar with, and that is the trials. Trials, and we'll look at some of these words here in a minute, develop them, but that is something that's going on in our lives that's distracting, that's something, a hardship, something we don't want. It's something that is wearing on us. And of course, we would rather get rid of it. We would rather avoid it. We would rather learn how to get out of that situation than being told here, consider it pure joy. In other words, this is a very unnatural verse. This is not, see, we begin to see in here the revelation of God's Word, the attitude of God's people, the influence of God's Spirit. Meaning, this is not just a book on how to get along in the world. This is a book on how to live in this world from the right perspective. Meaning, if you were just going to join a club to make your life easier, you would not join a church for Christian reasons. You may join the church for a variety of other reasons, but they would not be necessarily Christian. Maybe you need friends. Maybe you need someone to help you with your problems. Maybe you're hoping you can hook up with a business deal somewhere. Maybe you're, you know, if you're not married, you're trying to find a guy, you know, or if you're a guy trying to find a girl, you know, a singles club, or, you know, a variety of other things. But this is saying right here, the purpose of the church is to let us realize that our position as Christians is much broader, much bigger. Why if someone's looking for someone to marry, why would they be coming here? But things are starting to mix up already. But it's a very unnatural verse. And I want you to see right here, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Just to kind of touch this verse off first, it says, pure joy. Consider it pure joy. That's an interesting phrase, pure joy. If we had a bottle, a container of water, people bottle water now, they call it pure water, as if, you know, what other things are in the water. But it's pure. That means there's only water in there. It's been purified. If we took a bottle of joy and put it in that same condition, we would have pure joy, meaning all the other impurities have been taken out. In other words, what he is saying there, consider it 100% only joy. Your only attitude is joy whenever you face trials. Now, you think about your situation. If you were to make a chart of whenever you face a trial, a hardship, a difficulty, and you had all these different attitudes that you could, you know, go down the checklist and check off, you know, which of those ingredients are in your attitude right now. Anger, check. You know, a frustration, check. And then they put a percentage by it. Anger, 98%. You know, frustration, another 98%. Well, that's impossible. Yeah, but I'm really frustrated. But here he says, no, you wouldn't check frustration, you wouldn't check anger, you wouldn't check, you'd only go all the way down the list and you'd check joy. And it would be 100, that would be the only ingredient in your attitude. So when you, he's saying, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of any kind. He's setting us up, you know, this is a huge thing. We've talked about this from other classes, but that very first thing where it says all joy, consider it all joy. That is in the imperative, which means it is a command. There are 108 verses in this book, and in those 108 verses, there are 54 of those verses that contain imperatives or commands. The verb in 54 of the 108 is a command, is this is what you do. This is what you do. It's not a suggestion. It's a command. It's not an action verb that something says. It's a word that is saying, do this. And he is starting off by saying, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Now, he has not told us, and we're not going to get into all the details tonight, on why you should, but he begins to say, when you're in a trial, when you're in a hardship, your attitude should be pure joy, 100% joy. Now, obviously, we've got something to learn. Obviously, and I'll put you in my own camp, obviously, I've got something to learn. Obviously, maybe if I've got a little joy and I can see the benefits, I am not filled with 100% joy when I face a trial. Now, what kind of trials are they talking about? Now, there's an interesting word right here. Whenever you face trials of many kinds. Now, again, that's the English translation, but the word means many-faceted, variety. It's a manifold. It's used later in an earlier epistle that Paul writes as far as the manifold wisdom of God. And that's the same word, same exact word. It's the trials of manifold kinds. The Greek word, I mean, you go a different ways with it, find it in various writings and stuff, but it is referred to like a diamond. You know, a diamond that is cut, and as you move it around, it's many faceted. It's got, look at all the sides. You just keep, and you can never see the same angle twice, hardly. It's just it's, you know, in a sense, eternal. It just keeps, you just keep different lights and different lookings. That's what makes a diamond so beautiful. He is saying here, as was said earlier about the manifold wisdom of God, you're not going, God doesn't have four wisdoms. God is wise in this area. This is manifold. It's like God is just, it's like anywhere you put God, it's like he's wise. He's got any situation, he's got something to say. He's got an angle to teach you. He's got something to show you. It's many faceted. And so when it says, when you face trials of many kinds, that is saying there is no limit. We're not talking about persecution for being a believer only. We are talking about that. We're not just talking about when your car breaks down or your lawnmower breaks down. We're not just talking about that, although that would be included. We're not just talking about when you're having a hard time in a relationship with somebody, although that would be included. It's like I could not give you a list of all the trials that this would include. You hear what I'm saying? This is everything. Whenever you come into a trial, if it's personal, if it's a financial, if it's a mechanical, if it's, you know, emotional, that I already said. I mean, this goes on and on. Consider it pure joy. In other words, God has got this thing locked down that your life is His. He's got your, we're not just saved and we're in His hand. Our life is in His hand so that whenever anything happens, it's like, all right, God is able to do something. Now, the thing is, if you're thinking, if you're with me, you're thinking, my gosh, this is weird. This is so unnatural. I would not have joy when my lawnmower breaks down. I would not have joy when there's a difficulty in a relationship. I would not have joy in it. Something's wrong. I'm frustrated. I'm angry. I want to solve this issue. I don't find joy. In fact, you would be weird, would you not, to be in a situation where a disaster happens and you go, yeah, this is cool. You'd say, uh-oh. In fact, if my kids were with a person like that, I'd get my kids away from that person. You see, if I was hanging around a person and every time something weird happens, something disaster happens, they beam with joy. It's like, we'd call that satanic, we'd call that demonic, that person's demented, you see. So this cannot be talking about when disaster or a trial happens, be happy, be joyful because this is good. No, it's not good, it's a disaster, it's a trial. Your lawnmower broke down, your car broke down, you've broken a relationship with somebody, you're financially out of control, you're emotionally upset, something is wrong. Now, there's two things. One, it says, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Now notice this, testing of your faith, the trial is a testing of your faith. The trial is going to be used for something. And it says, develops, it is going to be used to produce something. So you're not rejoicing because of a disaster. You're not rejoicing because of the hardship. You're rejoicing at the opportunity that you've got because this is going to produce something. Because remember, your life is in God's hands. Not just your eternal life, as in when I die, I go to heaven. But every breath, every moment, every thought is in God's hands. And He is protecting you, even though maybe the situation doesn't look like it. God has you in the hands, and He's going to use this situation to protect. Nothing can come to you but by God, because He has saved you, washed you in the blood of the Lamb. He has you in His control. Now, there's a whole teaching that circles around this, including, you know, the discipline of God, the love of God, the things that He's going to bring you into cause growth. So watch. Now look at the very first word, at least in the NIV here. It says, consider it pure joy. It doesn't say, feel the pure joy. It doesn't say, you know, that it's going to be an emotion. You'll find joy in your soul when you have a persecution or a trial. The word is consider. Now we look on our notes, if you don't mind. It's right down there. It's where it says count in parentheses there towards the top of the page. And I've got the Greek word written down there for you, as if you would care. But count is from that word, which is a strengthened form of the Greek word that means to lead. There's another Greek word that means to lead, as if you'd lead somebody, you know, follow me this way. Or you'd lead the sheep, or you'd lead someone this way or that way, or lead something. This is a strengthened form of that word. Does not mean to lead. Come over here. Come follow me. It is a strengthened form, which means it means to command with official authority. So now let's go back. That word that is being translated in our NIV text is translated consider, is a word that means lead or now command with official authority. Command it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Let's go back and look at the notes. It is translated this way throughout the Bible. It is translated 10 times as count, 4 times as think, 3 times esteem, have rule over, 3 times, and be governor, 2 times. I like the thought there, or the word, think. In other words, what you are commanding, what you are considering, is not you're not commanding. There's nowhere in this verse that you are commanding the situation. Wouldn't that be a fun verse to teach? When you face trials of any kind, you just command it to go away. That would be fun teaching, and you could get wild up about that, but that is not what we're commanding. If you've tried that, you can't command situations to change. You can't even command a person to change. I've tried. You've got to do something to cause them to change. You can't just say, command them to change. They may change their behavior momentarily, but they're not changing. They're just ducking to get out of your way. They're still the same. You can't change circumstances. This command is directed at guess who? Your attitude, your thinking. In other words, well, it's right there very clearly. It's translated count or think or esteem. In other words, think it pure joy, my brothers. Now, think. Now, we're not going to get into some kind of mind game where you begin to twist your mind around. This is good. This is good. No, it's bad. No. I really, this is good. Because it's not good. It's a disaster, whatever this trial is in. It's bringing in a hardship on you. But what you need to see here to consider, you're going to have some information. Consider it pure joy, my brothers. Be able to think it pure joy, brothers, whenever you face trials of any kind. Why? Because you know something. You know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. In other words, the reason you can think in your mind when a disaster or persecution or troubles come, 100% joy. You take and go, now, if I have been understanding the Bible correctly, if I have experienced God's work in my life in the past, this trial is going to produce something in me. Okay, so although I don't like this situation, I can now discipline myself. I can command myself. You know the truth. I'm not living by sight. I'm living by faith. And faith is not imaginary. Okay? When I say faith, it doesn't, I believe. No. Faith, meaning a body of truth. It is called the faith. A body of information that we have now taken and embraced. This is reality. Not a science fiction reality that no one ever sees. It's the reality revealed to us by the Creator. It is unknown to other people because it's a revelation from God, from the spiritual realm. And so, in other words, we get this body of information, we put it in the way we think, and we can go ahead and consider. We can now think when trials come, wait a minute, there's something greater than this trial. It always comes back to God. It always comes back to Jesus Christ. This trial is difficult, but this trial is sandwiched between Jesus Christ and the one he loves, the one he died on the cross for. And so now I see Jesus Christ and the trials in the middle. I'm going to go through this and Jesus Christ is leading me. If I don't know Jesus Christ, if I don't understand the Bible teaching, if I don't understand the doctrine, all I see is the trial and I'm going to freak out. I can't have any joy. I'm broken down. But because I know this truth, that it's going to produce something in my life. I can go through this looking for what God is doing. Not only is my automobile giving me trouble, but God is here teaching me something, testing me, trying me, approving me, preparing me for something. Well, what about the devil? Well, there is a devil. There's no doubt about it. Ephesians 6 says our battle's not against flesh and blood, but against the powers and authorities in the heavenly realm. But if you remember, the devil is still under God. If the devil is causing this, it really doesn't matter. You hear what I'm saying? The devil's attacking. It really doesn't matter because I am still in God's hand. The devil is never going to pry God's fingers off of my life, grab my life, and run off. Wait, bring that back, bring that back. And it's like, therefore, that brief moment in time, what's going to happen to me? It's like, God's got to hunt him down and get it back. Or God says, well, you know, it was your fault because maybe your faith weakened God's fingers and the devil took you out. Now you've got to get your faith strong enough to resist the devil to make him let you go to bring it. It's like, that becomes very, very weird. It's like, I am saved. God has sealed me for eternity. My life is in his hands. And it says in Romans chapter 8, all things work together for the good of those who love the Lord. All things. That, and it goes on to list, you know, even angels and demons and principalities. It's like there's nothing can separate you from that power that God's got in your life. Now, with that understanding, you can take a breath and look at the trial and say, okay, here's a trial. And you can try to decide theologically where it comes from, and that's very important at certain times. But the big picture is, James does not identify what kind of trial it is. All he says is trial, and then throws that word on many kinds, the manifold kind, any kind of trial. Well, is this the devil or is this my fault? It still falls under this category of trial. You can break it down theologically, but the answer is still the same. It's going to work to your benefit. Now, consider it means think or count it, analyze it, and if you've got some Bible teaching, you can analyze it correctly by saying, ah, Jesus Christ is out there in front of me. Consider it pure joy, 100% joy. Okay, I'm going to deal with it. I'm frustrated. I've got anger. I'm broken down, but hey, that's my reaction to this problem. I'm going to step back and consider the fact that Jesus Christ is doing something in my life. If I continue to follow him, I'm going to concentrate on the joy of the result of this and begin to go through it. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Now, I'm going to throw something at you real quickly. If you look down there on your paper, the next word, trials. And there's that word written down there, that trials is in the Greek, where it's consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Now, this is a frustrating thing as a Bible teacher, because that word trials is, as you see right there in the Greek word written there, is the exact same word when you go to chapter 1, verse 13. Now, you want to get a little frustration? It's the same word. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. And lo and behold, guess what? It's the same word. Oh, that throws a real big problem in my teaching, because I can categorize this. You got the first few verses and then the second few verses. And there's two different words there in the Greek, hopefully. You can teach what this word means, and you can teach what this word means, and you can break them down. But when you study this, they're the same word. And so that puts me as a teacher, as someone that's leading people or showing this to people, I've got to do something with it. First of all, the translators say, consider pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. And calls it trial, and then jumps over in verse 13, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. And it's consistently like that in all the translations. Meaning, as James wrote this, the translators are, what I'm saying is, I'm going to show you some things, but first, consider the translators who know more Greek than I know, obviously. The translators always take those words and say they're going two different directions. But it's the same word. One of the things, I've got some notes written down here. First, let's go through these notes, because this becomes very important. The root word originally meant to pierce, search, or attempt. So the root word for trials or testing is a word that means to pierce, to search through something, to go, what's inside of there? So in other words, we've got the root word that means, as far as a testing, is saying that we're going to examine this person or this thing and find out what's in there. Find out what they're made of. It developed to mean to try or test intentionally and with the purpose of discovering what good or evil, what power or weakness was in a person or thing. So as the word developed, it began to mean you're going to take this item, maybe it's a coin, and you're going to test the coin. Is this a real gold coin? I'll test it. I'll find out what's... It looks like a gold coin, but we've got some tests, and we've test the coin. You could test someone. They say they're a pharmacist, or they say they're a doctor. Let's give them the official examination, and you give them the body of information. You've got to be tested. You qualified. You are a doctor, or whatever it is. Now, because men so often break down and fail during testing, this gave the word, periazo, the sense of putting someone to the test with the intention and hope that they break down. Because so often when men were tested in different things, they would fail. If they're tested in a situation, then you look at your own life. How many times has God put you in a situation and tested you, and then you collapsed? How many times have you seen me in a situation where God was tempting me or testing me? God doesn't tempt, but testing me, and I failed. I broke down. Now, some of you on the couch there can raise your hand quite quickly. Why? Certainly, Father. But anyway, men so often break down in times of testing. But now, why? Why? Because we're starting off with a fallen creature, and we're forming them into the image of Christ. So there's no one. You're a Christian. Get this out of your mind. Well, I don't. I'm fine. I do pretty good. You're lying. You can't. You are in a process of growth. Meaning, if the Bible is accurate, you are born deprived. You're born in a sinful state, and God is going to save you and then begin conforming you into the image of Christ. That means you've got a long ways to go from the point that you were born in sin, and you're going to be glorified in eternity. And so you might as well face the fact that you are daily failing in your thoughts, in your actions, in your relationships, in your responsibilities, the way God wants you to handle situations. But at the same time, realize that God, your Father, knows your condition. That He is not going to get you saved and say, okay, got you saved, let's see you do it. He knows you can't. That's like going out and recruiting people for like any kind of a sports team. Let's say you're going to go out and recruit people for a basketball team. Okay, you want to play? You pay their fee, give them a little uniform. Okay, you're ready to play. Let's go have a game. Now, assuming this person was a soccer player, or better yet, a harp player. Okay, they played the harp. You just suited them up, they signed up for the basketball team, and you gave them a uniform. You put their name on the program, name on the book, Lamb's Book of Life. You know, you can make all these correlations, and you put them on the floor, you got a real referee, you got a real opposition team, you throw the ball up in the air, and they play like a bunch of harp players. You see, I mean, they can't even score. I mean, they're annihilated. What do you do as a coach? If you expected anything different, then this must be your first game. This must be your first experience with basketball. Because anybody who's coached basketball realizes that if these people have never touched a basketball, they're not going to be able to dribble it, maybe bounce it, you know, but maybe toss it towards the hoop, but not hit it, let alone go in, let alone be able to understand an offense that you're describing at halftime. It's hopeless. You'd laugh at the coach. The problem is with the coach and his expectations. Let's flip that around if you haven't stayed with me. Now God takes people that are born in sin, brings them into the kingdom of light, out of the kingdom of darkness. And what does He expect them to do? What does He expect to happen? That the harp players become ball players or the sinners become saints? He knows there's a process. He knows. And so He's going to go to practice. Now, if you go to one practice, okay, now here's how you shoot. Now, these guys, you put a ball in their hand for the first time, shoot. And, they do make some pathetic efforts. So now you show them the Pete Maravich video, you know, the window, the elbow tucked in, the wrist flex, the good follow through, extend. And you spend an hour and a half describing the jump shot. Okay. Now do it. They enjoyed the video. They tried and they listened and they understand the tucked in elbow. They're not really why, but you know now they really look weird. They tuck their elbow in, they put the ball in, and it's like now the ball rolls off the back of their hand. At least the first time they tried by themselves, it went. Now what do you do now? You continue to practice and drill. Do you think they're going to get it tomorrow? No. How about in a week? They're not going to get it this year, coach. Is the coach surprised? No, he's not surprised. Now let's give yourself a little break. Is God surprised that he's still sending practice schedules your way and you're still dropping the ball and you're not understanding and you're failing? Is he surprised that you're not living at the level of Jesus Christ? He's not surprised. He just asked you to come back to practice tomorrow. He just asked you to, let's watch the video again. He's just asking you to continue to grow. And so, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you have practice. Because you know that the practicing of your faith develops perseverance. You are now, again, that's another whole topic of what we're developing, but you've got to go through situations. And the very fact that sometimes people will think, well, I'm going to get out of this. That whole teaching of getting out of trials is like a bunch of basketball players sitting in the locker room trying to figure out how they can close the gym down so they don't have to go to practice today. We're going to barricade it. We're going to tie up the coach. We're going to bind him. You know, we're going to cast out the balls. It's like, when we get there, they'll be, no, they can't make us practice. It's like, that's ridiculous. You've got to go to practice. You can't sit in the locker room and deny it's there. The only way you're going to become a ball player is to go through the gym. The only way you're going to become Christ-like is to go through trials. Now let me show you a verse, and we'll look at this later. I'm going to 1 Peter. I got a couple things very quickly. I'm looking at 1 Peter. I particularly love it when I flip to a verse and it's saying exactly what I'm saying. You know, it just kind of makes me feel like I'm on target. Because sometimes I wonder. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter, this is just a reference verse. Verse 19. We'll begin in verse 19. This whole thing's about suffering right here, which ties into what we're talking about. Verse 19, for it is commendable, chapter 2 of 1 Peter, verse 19. I don't do well with numbers. For it is commendable if a man bears up under the pains of unjust suffering, because he is conscious of God. Conscious, see, count, thinking. He can bear up under suffering because he is conscious of God. Some people won't suffer. They will run from it. They won't go through. They won't, you know, solve the problem. They try and get out of it. This guy, because he's conscious of God, he can face it. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? That's another topic. But watch. But if you suffer for doing good and endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you were called. Meaning, this is your lot in life. This is how you're going to become. This is why you're here. To this you were called. Why? Because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. What happened to Jesus Christ? Now, he lived a perfect life. Did he ever suffer justly? Did he ever suffer justly? Did he ever do something and, that was a bad attitude, Jesus. I know. I just got carried away right there. Jesus never brought retribution on himself because he had a bad attitude. He never said anything that was sinful. He did what his Father did and said what his Father said. And where did he end up? Well, persecuted throughout his life, but nailed on a cross, dead. What was going to happen to us? Well, that won't happen to us. Well, you see, Christian, you see, like Christ, the whole concept. Hebrews chapter 12. Go to Hebrews chapter 12. And Jesus is going to do exactly what we're talking about. Hebrews 12, verse 2. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, not on the trial, because the trial does not bring you pure joy. The trial brings you grief. So when you're in a trial, fix your eyes on Jesus because, well, He's the author and perfecter of our faith. You see, it's us, the trial, and we're looking at Jesus. And as we go through this trial, He's developing our faith. Not faith to move a mountain, you see. We're not some imaginary faith. Now, again, the Bible refers to it, but we got teaching so whacked out about faith that you can't even make sense out of it. But faith for us to now have confidence that where He's leading us, we can go. We can make it. It goes on here and says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy, hear that word? For the joy set before Him endured the cross. Now we could go on, and Hebrews where it talks about how He was made perfect. It says He was made perfect through suffering. Oh my gosh, how? Now again, He had to reach something, He had to attain something. That's another whole teaching. Scorning its shame, for the joy set before Him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider Him, consider Jesus, who endured such opposition from sinful men. There's that word. Consider Him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. So Jesus is our example. Let's go back to this verse and look at some teaching on this word, and we're wrapping this up. We're talking about that word, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials. Now, there are two meanings for the word trial. We should do this. We'll come back to that. There are two meanings for the word trial, or that word, that Greek word. Now, again, it's the same Greek word, but there's two different directions that it goes. And it depends on the context. And listen, I don't know if that's right or not. Well, maybe it's not. But here's the word in verse 2 being translated one way, and verse 13 being translated a different way. So the context is going to tell you which way you go with this word. And the two meanings are this. The first meaning, as I've got written down there, means to put one to the test. It means to take somebody and test them. The example, Genesis 22:1, and God tested Abraham. Go sacrifice your son. Who said that? Was it Abraham's sin nature? Was it the devil? Or was it God that said, Abraham, take your son, your only son, and go to the place I'm going to show you and sacrifice him? What was it? It was a test, because when Abraham had the sword lifted up ready to plunge it into his son or slit his son's throat, the angel of God, which would be Jesus or the Son of God in heaven, said, stop. Now I know what's in your heart. I've seen it. What was that? What was this, a test? The test. I wanted to see if you would do it. Now, let's read on. It also denotes external afflictions, as in 1 Peter 4:12. Now notice, 1 Peter 4, we could go there and read that, and we should probably, but notice that's in the same book we just came from, 1 Peter, a book about suffering and how to deal with suffering. The idea here, and we're going to develop this into this verse 3 about this word, but notice, it was testing to find out what was in Abraham, if he was able to handle it. Now, had Abraham ever failed a test? Yeah. That's what's neat about Bible teaching. You can go with theology out of the New Testament. Well, this is what we believe. Well, then you better be able to go to the Old Testament and find a story about it. You better find a historical example. We're teaching here that God tests us, that God tries us, that God builds us through trials and testing. I don't know if you can teach that. I say that's what's in there. And then you go back to Genesis and Abraham. Test after test, he fails and fails and fails. What's God do? Strikes him with lightning, fries him up, just like the harp player who wasn't ready to play basketball. No, God picks him up, takes him again. 25 years of testing and trials until finally he says, go offer your son Abraham, or your son Isaac. What's Abraham do? He does the impossible. He considers, it says, he considered that God could raise the dead. You see? He had developed a faith that, okay, well, I can do this because God can stink and raise the dead. And was ready. No, stop. Okay, good. You're ready. Was that a test? Huh? That's a test. He was leading him up to that. Did he do that 25 years ago? No. He ran to Egypt. He made a mistake. He said the wrong thing. He did the wrong thing. He got scared. He got selfish. It's like, why? Because he's a sinner becoming a saint. He's in the process of developing his faith. So what we just saw here, we have, and again, we could go on and on. We want to do David. How many you want to do Moses? How many people you want to do? You want to do Joseph? It's people after people after people did not just step out into glory. It's like they fell. What's going on? Well, they're just losers. No, God's testing, teaching, until finally their faith got, now boom, and then they enter into Hebrews chapter 11. By faith, Cain, or Abel, by faith, Noah, by faith, Enoch, by faith, Abraham, by faith, Sarah, by faith, all the way through. He says, I don't have time to tell you about Gideon and Samson. It goes on and lists all these people. Samson, how many times did he fail? But yet in the end, put my hands on the pillar and I'll do what God wants me to do. I'll die with these uncircumcised Philistines. A hero of faith. Not because of Delilah, not because of his wedding, not because of... Those were all Samson becoming who he was. And how many times... When did God give up on Samson? Never did. I would have. I would have called him an unregenerate heathen. Get out. But what'd God do? You're acting like an unregenerate heathen. Come here. I got something for you. You understand? It gives us a lot of hope. Now, in other words, the first meaning is to put one to the test. And I have heard teaching that God doesn't test. And now that's damnable stuff. Because now a person, anytime something happens in their life, if there's something they've done wrong, the devil's attacking them, they need more faith. Now, wait, that's contradictory. They need more faith. Need more faith, what? To keep the trial away. Wait, the trial is coming to give you more faith. No, I'm going to get more faith and keep it. You're taking like 2 plus 2 equals 4 and putting the 4 over here on the other side of the equal sign. 4 plus 2 equals 2. Or you're getting the whole formula mixed around. That's goofy. Faith does not keep trials away. Faith empowers you to go through the trial. Faith teaches you as a doctrine out of the Bible that a trial is something that I will go through. Jesus went through them. Peter went through them. It goes on and on. Okay. But the second meaning that is used in the Bible and other writings is to solicit one to do evil. Meaning to test them and cause them to do evil, to try and break them down. Now guess who is doing that? And now you're in verse 13 when it says, when tempted, no one should say God is... No one is doing this word, doing this testing, to cause you to do evil. He's not enticing you to do evil. That's going to come from the hand of the devil throughout the Bible. The devil's, it's saint in this word. The devil, then this word. But it's the same word that we see God using. God tested, Satan tempted. God tested, Satan tempted. But the thing is, it's the same Greek word many times. And how come are they translating it different? Because of the context, God is testing for approval. He's testing to take you to another place where Satan is tempting you to do evil and to give up, to turn away. In other words, it might be the same situation. And God is using it to test your faith, to prove you who you are. And Satan is using that same situation to cause you to fail and quit and be tempted by a situation. Oh, that's confusing. Not really. If you consider the fact that you're saved, God has his hand on you, and everything that comes your way, he's promised to lead you through it. Let's go now back to the book of Luke. Luke chapter 22. Luke 22, beginning in verse 24. Remember, Jesus had trials. Remember, the disciples are in the process of facing trials to become who they're going to be. And here's this verse. Both of these things are in this verse. There's a lot of things happening in these passages of Scripture. And so we're going to read through it. I'm going to ask you to really think. Really look for what I've been talking about and see these things. Because I'm not going to be able to tell you everything that's in these verses. But you're going to see the growth process, or the sinner in the process of becoming the saint. Saint Peter, as we call it. Also, a dispute arose among them in chapter 22 of Luke, verse 24. Also, a dispute arose among them as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. Okay, there's your sinners. But it's the disciples who are going to be the saints. Jesus said to them, "The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who exercise authority over them call themselves benefactors. But you are not to be like that." There you've got the contrast of kingdom. Consider it pure joy. This ain't pure joy. This is... "Instead, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. For who is greater, the one who is at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who is at the table? But I am among you as one who serves." We flip the scales. Now watch verse 28. "You are those who have stood by me in my trials." You see that word? That is our word that we're talking about. The same word that's in chapter 1, verse 2. Same word that's in chapter 1, verse 13 of James. "You are those who have stood by me during my trials. And I confer on you a kingdom." Right there. I had trials and I'm giving you the kingdom now. Isn't that funny? I had trials and I'm the king of the kingdom and I'm going to give you my kingdom. So what are they going to get? Trials. On this side, because you see, the greatest will be the servant. It's like we're flipped around. I'm the king from the kingdom, but now that I'm here, I had trials. So I give you my kingdom. So when you get there, you'll be with me as the king. But when you're here, you're going to have trials. Why? Well, number one, mainly for that first, at verse 24, "Also a dispute arose among them as to which of them was considered the greatest." Whoo, we need some trials here. We need to change the way these guys think. Going on. "You're going to be the kings with me." Now, why would you run from a trial who's going to prepare you to be a king? That's ridiculous. You've got to get a perception, perspective. That's what James is saying in chapter 1, verse 2. Consider it pure joy when you face trials. When you face trials, consider it joy because you know you're a king. You know you're from the kingdom. You know the Lord has come here and he had trials and he became the king. And now you're following. Peter said the same thing. The writer of Hebrews says, consider him who endured. That's joy. Now, verse 31. Let's give an example of this. "Simon, Simon," that's Peter, "Satan has asked to sift you as wheat." That's a fun verse. And let's just throw some theology around in that verse. "Simon, Simon, Satan has came to me and asked to sift you like wheat." That sounds like a trial. Sift you like wheat. Let's assume you've got a sifter. You know, a sifter is my best memory of a sifter is in the sand pile as a kid. Okay, and you've got the sand with some little rocks in it. And you put the sand in this little screen. I should make a sifter for the kids, except we just tore our sand pile down. But nonetheless, and you shake it back and forth like this, and all the little piece of sand fall through the screen, and all you got left is the big chunk. And then you think, cool, you know, and you dump them over here and you do it again. You really have no purpose. At least I had no purpose. It was cool sifting the sand. Now, Peter, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat. Satan has asked me. Satan came to me, Peter, and says, "I would like to take Peter, one of your disciples, one of your chosen ones. I want to put him in this pan with a screen on the bottom and just shake him back and forth and see what comes out." What do you say? What now? So Satan, by faith, I bound the devil, cast him down to the lake of fire, and told him, "Do not touch my servant Peter." Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Or, "Peter, if you have faith, you will overcome the devil. You'll see him on your left and you'll see him on your right. And by faith,
you'll duck and the devourer will be devoured. If you have faith, Peter. Okay, give me more faith.
Or we just go with, he asked to sift you like wheat. Consider it pure joy, Peter. Because the sifting of your faith develops perseverance. Now you choose your theology. I mean, you are free people. But remember, only one theology really works. The true theology. The true Word of God. Let's just read on. Simon, Simon, in verse 31. Satan has asked to sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you. What does that mean? I prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. Oh. Meaning, he's going to put you in the sifter, and he's going to sift you, and sift you, and sift you, and I'm going to use this for your faith. Because, what's the result? Meaning, I'm going to overcome him? If I have faith, I'll overcome. Watch. And when you turn back, that is the word recover. When you recover, strengthen your brothers. In other words, when you go through this sifting and you fail miserably, and you know he's going to fail because he's one of them, in verse 24, also dispute arose among them as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. I think we need a little sifting in the greatness category. Let's put him in the sifter. He sifts him, sifts him. Jesus could have said no. And I can show you Old Testament examples where the Lord said no. And I can show you Old Testament examples where the Lord said yes. He's in your power. But just don't, and then put a limit, don't take his life. You can do this, but don't go there. Meaning, Satan was so much under God's control that he could only at first attack Job's stuff, including his family. But don't touch the man. So Job's saying, I didn't get to touch the man. No wonder he didn't quit. Everybody's selfish as long as he don't get hurt. All right, God says. Then strike him. But don't kill him. Spare his life. Well, what was going on there? The same thing. That was the Old Testament. No, that's your Old Testament example of the New Testament theology. And guess what happened? Job's faith, in the end of the book, he says, I had heard of you, but I had not understood you. Now, how did he get there? The sifting of his faith, the trial. Now, there's many, many things there. That deserves a lot more teaching, but we're going to move on. Because I want to show you a couple more things here, and we're back to James chapter 1, verse 2. I want to show you now how we develop the context of this word. James chapter 1, verse 2. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Now notice, in verse 3, the word testing. That is a huge word. That is the word that is pivotal and actually helps us to put this in context. That word, I've got that on your paper there, where it says towards the bottom now. That means we're getting towards the end of this. Chapter 1, verse 3 identifies the kind, there's that word, periasmos, when it is defined with the word doikamion, all right, which has the ideal of approved after testing, or tested and approved, the genuine part of. That word, doikamion, can be translated trying, testing, proving, or means of testing. In other words, what that word is saying, and those are the two big words. If you want to do a study on trials, words for trials in the Greek, I've got these. Both these words are there. The first word is that one we've just seen in chapter 1, verse 2, perismos. And the second one is doikiminon, or whatever. And again, I wish I could pronounce all those words. I have a hard time with English. But you've got those two words. The one that starts with the D means to take and test someone for approval. It is a positive testing. It is the idea that I know you are a lifeguard. I know you're qualified. So, I just need you to go through these procedures so we can give you your certificate. So, jump in the pool and go through the routine. With full expectation that this person's going to make it. It's the positive test. It's the test you receive after you graduate from college to get your license. It's like, well, you've already had the education. Here you go. Take this test. It should not be any problem for you. If you are what you say you are, if you really have what you have,
In other words, what this word is meaning is that God hears you say, I'm a Christian and I have faith. And He knows you do because you're in His kingdom. But I'm going to test that faith to find out what kind of faith you have. Again, the Bible says faith unto faith. I mean, there's a growing, you continue to grow. So you are at this level, so I'm going to give you a test and find out what level, with full intention of you solving or finishing and passing the test. That is what God is doing. And if you fail, He brings you back to the gym, back to practice, and we prepare and continue until we can pass the test. We're going to find out your deficiencies. It's like this idea of pipes. I don't know this firsthand. I heard the story. Like when you have the boilers and you're boiling, you're boiling water for steam pressure or steam energy, whatever. If it's a steam engine or a heating a building or something, and you've got all these pipes, and the people have gone through that and put them all together. Okay, it's all together, and they say, "Well, we're done. Can you check us off as being finished and get our paycheck?" Wait, just a minute. What are we going to do before we pay the construction people that put these pipes into the steam engine or into the boiler system? We're going to test it. We're going to turn up the pressure. What? Wait a minute. We never had any intention of someone testing these. We just put them in so that we could get paid. No, before we pay you and say that you have done a good job, I'm just going to push this button here and turn up the pressure. Now, if they're smart, what have they already done? They've already done that. In fact, weeks ago, they did it for the first time. And when they did, shut it out. And they fixed it. You see? Why did they? Were they trying to destroy? They built the system. Are they trying to destroy it? They're trying to prove it. They're trying. They know there's probably a crack in here somewhere. With all these pipes, one of us didn't get something tight. And so they turn it on. And sure, there they see it, they shut it down, they fix it, and they find another one. And for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, they've been finding problems. And now comes the test by the superior, and they push the button, and the thing runs perfect. Why? Because they've gone through this Greek phase of testing with the intention of perfecting. That's God. That's James chapter 1, verse 2. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, when they push the pressure button to see where your leaks are at. Because the testing of your faith develops perfect pipes. Oh, okay. Turn it up. You see? Consider it pure joy. You don't like the pressure, but if you have a brain and you understand theology, it's like, consider. I can think, this is getting a lot of pressure, but this is good. This is good. Go to 2 Corinthians and we're done. I'm going to show you one more verse here. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Guess who learned this lesson? Well, we're in 2 Corinthians. I'm probably referring to Paul. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. I'm going to read this and then we're going to close down. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7. I won't explain this, and I always say that, but I'm not going to explain this. I'm going to read to it. You pay attention. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. He's talking about his own problem that he had. He had a trial. We're not going to get into all the debates on what it was. Just go with the story. Just let it read. To keep me from becoming conceited, which is an interesting translation itself, because of these surpassingly great revelations, there is given me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan, to torment me. Now notice, a messenger of Satan. Job had a messenger, it was Satan. Peter had a messenger, Satan asked to sift him like wheat. Now Paul has a messenger of Satan. And in all those, first Job and Peter, we see God right there in the middle of it. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, your faith is not strong enough. No, he said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. My power is made perfect in your trial. Therefore, meaning, I now consider, I now count, I now know, I now have an understanding in my theology Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. I get it. When I'm weak, I've got the power of God. God is working in my life. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness, in insults, in hardships. You hear what he said? This is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness. Does he like being weak? No. He says, therefore, I know that when I'm weak, Christ is strong. He's doing James 1:12. I delight in weakness, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, when I'm in a trial, that's when I become strong. So I consider it pure joy. I'm in the process of becoming strong. That is the introduction to James chapter 1. And understand, this is chapter 12 of 2 Corinthians. This is, we know, the fourth letter to the Corinthians. He had two or three visits before this letter, and he finally gets to this topic in chapter 12. Now you maybe understand the level of James's church when he begins the letter by saying, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many, many different types, because the testing of your faith develops perseverance. It's like, whoa, that's the end of the chapter stuff for the Corinthians, and in James's church, there's not even an introduction. That's the review of the notes. Understand, they're at a different level.